Hello, my name is Damien Majuri, and I'm an intern with the Australian Institute of International Affairs, New South Wales. It is my absolute joy and honour to have with me today Ambassador Anurul Chowdhury, Bangladesh's permanent representative to the United Nations and President of the UNICEF's Executive Board in 2000. Thank you, Ambassador, for joining us today and sharing some of your distinguished career with us.
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction and the invitation. But I am the former permanent representative of Bangladesh to the UN. I was ambassador to the UN from 1996 to 2001. After that, I joined as the Undersecretary General for the United Nations in charge of the most vulnerable countries of the world. That was a new post created, and I joined in 2002 till 2007. And I'm very happy to talk to you in this program being organized by the Australian Institute of International Affairs.
Thank you very much. Well, I think our approaches and understandings to conflict have always been developing. War and conflict no longer see men as the primary victims, and I think that scope has definitely been included to enlarged to include women and children as well, and society at large. So with that in mind, I'd like to first ask you about the UN Security Council Resolution 1325 on women, peace and security. Would you mind briefly explaining what this is and its effect on how countries approach conflict and post-conflict scenarios?
Yes, I am so happy that you raised that resolution in our discussion. When I was the president of the Security Council in March 2000, I thought this was a good opportunity for me to take an initiative to recognize the role of women positively contributing to peace and security. Since the Women's Conference in Beijing in 1995, we have been sort of lobbying with the members of the Security Council to recognize this role, which was for the first time elaborated in the Beijing platform for action. Security Council in its own way tried to push that off. Women were in the Security Council resolutions basically were recognized as victims of war, victims of conflict, victims of refugee situation, victims of rape, victims of all kinds of deprivation resulting from conflict and war. But nobody recognized in the Council, and I'm talking about the Security Council, about the role that women have been traditionally making to keep the societies peaceful, ensure that life goes normally when conflict is taking place, when the men are out in the bushes fighting, their children go to school, their food is on the table, and the basic social fabric of the country is maintained. So that we felt that it is high time. I myself was an active lobbyist for that, but when I found the opportunity as the president of the council, I thought this is my moment to take the initiative, and which I did. But because of the strong objection of the permanent members of the Security Council, it was not possible. So we agreed on a declaration during my presidency to be adopted by the consensus of 15 members of the Council, which recognizes that the equality between women and men is inextricably linked to peace and security. And it called for greater participation of women in the decision-making process for issues of peace and security. So that was the fundamentals were agreed upon. The political and organizational breakthrough was made, conceptual breakthrough was made. And then it took us 8 more months to get on board all the members of the Security Council to agree to a resolution in October 2000 when we adopted this resolution, which is known as UN Security Council Resolution 1325.
It's amazing trying to bring new perceptions of how women shape the role, even at home or at war as well, not just as victims of war, but also primary actors and decision makers. And how do you think that, where has it been proven to be most effective, but also are there areas that might require further initiative?
I believe that women bring in a special perspective, a special dimension when they are given opportunity to participate. When they are in the peace table, I think they bring a special quality of interaction which ultimately benefits the post-conflict transition of the countries. And I have seen this personally in West Africa in a big way, in Sierra Leone, in Liberia, in Guinea. I was at that time the chairman of the Security Council Sanctions Committee on Sierra Leone. So I have been to villages, I have seen the women's groups working, and there was a group of women organized from these three countries, and they were called Mano River Women's Union. And that they really worked very hard to make things move better after the peace agreement was signed. So that is the qualitative improvement they bring in into the post-conflict transition. And also, in general, I think we should not always think of women's participation in the context of war and conflict only. There are many internal tensions which are much better handled by women if they are given the opportunity to participate.
Fantastic. And what do you perceive as some of the biggest obstacles to prosperity in least developed countries? For example, might it be something like political stability, as might appear to be the case in Sudan, or are there other factors to it as well?
I think historically, the least developed countries, the poorest and the most vulnerable countries of the world, had gone through a long process of deprivation and discrimination. And I think lack of good governance is one of the basic elements. And also, a number of them did not have a democratic process of working together involving the people of the country concerned. And colonial masters have been also not very kind to these countries. And I believe that these countries, what they need now is an opportunity to participate as equal partners at the global level. That is very important. When I was in charge of the UN office for these countries, the least developed countries, the landlocked developing countries, and small island developing countries, developing states. And these are the total of 90 countries, almost 40% of the membership of the United Nations.
Yeah.
Those were what I called the voiceless countries of the world. And they had no opportunity to exert their right in the global forums. They had no opportunities of competing equally in the marketplaces. There are many artificial boundaries and constraints created for these countries to export their products to the developed countries' markets. So these are the constraints, and the constraints in general of the global economic system, which hinders or affects them most viciously than many other countries.
Yeah.
But I believe that the human resources of these countries are wonderful. They are willing, given the opportunity, to make the best out of their contribution to make their country grow up in a prosperous way.
Absolutely. And But on that note about keeping everyone on an even playing field and bringing everyone to the table, what role do you see developed countries such as Australia having in fostering this spirit and moving towards peace? My mind thinks to active intervention roles in the Middle East and Syria, but also economic and political influences such as China's One Belt, One Road initiative.
Well, I believe that when we talk about the development of least developed countries, what I think is primarily is important for the development partners to focus on human development in those countries. That is the essential foundation for any progress and growth. So that I think in that context, I would emphasize very much the role of women. Developed countries, the donor countries, should support the empowerment and equality of women and girls in all these countries. It is absolutely essential. Without involvement of that 50% of the population of each of these countries, no progress is possible. And we have seen that $1 spent on women's health, education, and participation, you get a return of $7. And it is very important that we keep that in mind. And that way, not only the women of the country, but the world as a whole benefits from the development assistance, which is becoming shrunk and shrunk every year, is able to contribute.
And lastly, Ambassador, I'd like to ask about how an international body like the UN might best approach internal conflicts, but that might have external impacts, such as what's occurring in the Rakhine State in Myanmar, and its effect on the Rohingya people, and also the spillover into Bangladesh.
I think that's a big challenge for the United Nations, not only in Myanmar with the Rohingyas, but also worldwide. I mean, see what is happening in Yemen and Syria. Yemen, this is a biggest challenge to children, that the worst victim of the whole conflict are the children. And UNICEF came out with a report recently mentioning and highlighting this. I believe that the United Nations should firstly try to monitor the situations as they are growing. Rohingya situation did not develop overnight. And UN had a special representative of the Secretary General to Myanmar. Why this could not be anticipated? So that anticipatory capacity is necessary. The UN is too beholden to the member states. What they say, what they want, how diplomatic it would be to go in, and that's not happening. And that leadership and that role should be assumed by the Secretary General and his management team, that we need to preempt these situations going out of hand. And that is, I think, the biggest role the UN can play. UN has the credibility, UN has the convening power, the capacity. It is the most universally respected body, but Secretary General should take the initiative. He should suggest that I want to have that capacity. Me and my team should be able to ring the warning bell before the situation becomes out of hand. So that is, I believe, is most important for us, and Secretary General and his team should be thinking about it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you sharing your insights into some of these big issues. If you'd like to follow some more international affairs news, please head to internationalaffairs.org.au. Thank you.
Thank you.